afternoon. I was going to talk about Shofar today, so we have a show and tell. Yeah, we're coming up to the, of course, the Yom Kippur Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year, and Rosh Hashanah is really a bit of a mysterious holiday, really, because if you look in the Torah itself, the Torah does not say that Rosh Hashanah is the first of the year. It doesn't say that at all. In fact, it says virtually nothing. In Parshas Emor, it says, on the first day of the seventh month, let me just find the exact pasuk. Yeah, this is in Vayikra Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Leimor, Daber El Bnei Yisrael Leimor, speak to the Bnei Yisrael, telling them, Bachodesh Hashvi'i Biachod Lachodesh. On the seventh month, the first day of the month, now we know in the Torah, right, we always count the months from Nisan. Nisan is the month of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Torah said, Rishon hu lachem l'chadshei Hashanah, it is the first of the months. So the seventh month, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei. So on the first day of the seventh month, Yiyah lachem Shabbaton. So this doesn't mean a Shabbaton, but Yiyah lachem Shabbaton means you have a day of rest. Because Yom Tov is also called a day of rest, because we cannot do malachos except for food preparation. Zichrein Trua, a remembrance of Terua. Now Trua means shouting or blowing. Mikra Kodesh, a day that should be proclaimed holy. Kol Moleches Avodah Lo Sasu, do not do malacha except for Ochel Nefesh. V'ikraftem Isha Lashem, and you should bring a special korban to Hashem. It does not tell you what that is. So, if we would ask, what is the reason for the observance of this holiday in the Torah? You're given no reason at all. You are simply told, on the first day of the seventh month, you should have a zichrein trua, a remembrance of blowing. I'll go, what's that? A remembrance of a blowing. And you shall bring a korban for Hashem. There is only one other place where the Torah talks about the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, and that is in Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Pinchas. That is the second reference, and that tells you what is the korban that you bring. So if I look at Parshas Pinchas, this is Bamidbar, Perek Chavtes, Pasuk Aleph. Again, Ubachodesh Hashvi Biachod Lachodesh, the first day of the seventh month. Mikra Kodesh Yalechem, it shall be a day that is proclaimed holy. Kol Melechas Avodah Lo Sasu, do not do Melechas Avodah. Here it says, Yoim Trua Yalechem, a day of blowing. So you'll notice one difference. In Vayikra, it calls Rosh Hashanah, first of all, it's not called Rosh Hashanah at all, I'll get to that, but it's called Zichron Trua, a remembrance of blowing. In Bamidbar, it is called Yom Trua, a day of blowing, right? That's one difference. And then it tells you specifically what the korban is that you bring. It says, Vasisa Mola, you shall bring as a korban one bull, one ram, seven sheep to be burnt offerings, olos, and one goat for chatz. Remember, we discussed this, I think, the very beginning of this month, we talked about the structure of the Musaf offering. And I just want to show you, just be sure you understand, that this is essentially a cross-reference to Emor. In Emor, it just says, V'hikravtem ishel Hashem. You shall bring a sacrifice to Hashem. It does not tell you what that sacrifice is, but that sacrifice is explained in Parshas Pinchas as one bull, one bull, one ram, seven sheep, right? One bull, one ram, seven sheep, as burnt offerings, olos, and one goat as a chatas, right? For those of you who are not in agriculture, remember their animal husbandry, remember a ram is a male sheep. So the difference between an ayil and a kevis, kevis is also a male sheep, but the difference is kevis is a lamb, a young lamb, and ayil is a mature ram. They're the same species of animal. Okay. So these are the two pesukim. Now, again, even if you just look at the pesukim, you'd want to know, why is there a holiday? It's very odd to say this is Rosh Hashanah. What? How could you have the beginning of the year in the seventh month? It's not described as the first month. It's the seventh month. And the Torah doesn't say it's the beginning of the year. In fact, the Torah doesn't say what it is at all. Unlike Pesach, where we have a direct connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim, unlike Sukkot, which is connected to the clouds of glory, unlike Shavuos, which is connected to Matan Torah, although there too is a bit of a mystery, the Torah does not say the Torah was given on Shavuos. You have to figure it out. Rosh Hashanah is very much shrouded in mystery. There is no particular reason that is given. We'll come back to that. Hold that in a moment. Second of all, you'll notice the following. In both verses that I read to you, the word shofar is not mentioned at all. You know, the great mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah is blowing the shofar. The word shofar is not mentioned. The word shofar does not appear. What does appear in the two verses is the word teruah. In Vayikra, the word zichron teruah appears. In Pinchas, the word yom teruah appears. Now, the word teruah is a word that does appear elsewhere in the Chumash. For example, it sometimes refers to shouting. Shouting, for example, when Moshe Rabbeinu was coming down and he sees people worshiping the golden calf. The Yariyu Kol, he hears people shouting in the camp. So the word teruah alone would not even mean shofar. It could mean shouting, a day of screaming, maybe a day of special prayer. So there are a lot of different questions here, but I want to focus really on a technical question today, and that is, what is the mitzvah of Tekiyah Shofar, and how do we know it? And then we'll get to the other questions as well. So, if the Torah does not say shofar in Rosh Hashanah, where does the Torah use the mitzvah of shofar? The only place where the Torah says there's a mitzvah to blow a shofar is not Rosh Hashanah. It's by the Yovel, by the Jubilee year. And that date is not Rosh Hashanah, that date is Yom Kippur. At the end of Vayikra, the Torah says, you know, you observe Shemitah. In Mirz Hashem, we're going to have the Shemitah year soon. And let me just remind anyone that is a gardener. I didn't realize how many Orsamech people are amateur gardeners, but Mirz Hashem, it's good to add to the fertility of Eretz Yisrael. But one needs to talk to a rabbi or someone about all the halachas of gardening during Shemitah. They can be a little complicated. Even moving flower pots around, even if all you're doing is moving a flower pot, that may be a shaila during Shemitah. But be it as it may, so we have seven Shemitahs, right? 49 years. Seven, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7. After 49 years, we then have a 50th year that is called the Yovel. And the Yovel is the Jubilee year. And the Jubilee year we don't keep today. We don't even have a record of it so much today. And the reason is because the halacha of Yovel is Yovel only applies when most of the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. It's a Gezeres HaKasav. When most of the Jews do not live in Eretz Yisrael, even if we keep Shemitah, we do not keep the Yovel. Now there's an interesting question, because some demographers say that we are approaching a number where over 50% of the Jews in the world will be living in Israel. Now it's like 49%. So we're very much approaching it. The question is that going to reinstitute the Yovel year, which would be very, very complicated.
Does that include the 10-month stratus?
I didn't hear you.
Does that include the 10-month stratus?
Well, that's the question. So that's really going to be the answer. I mean, and the answer is that the problem is there are many, many Jews who live in the world who don't even know they're Jews. We have the lost 10 tribes, and etc. So even if all the identified Jews are living in Israel, that's still going to be less than 50%. You need the 10 tribes. In fact, Tosfos says in a number of places that not only did we stop keeping Yovel after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Tosfos says we did not keep Yovel throughout the duration of the second Beis HaMikdash, because most of the Jews lived in the diaspora. And not only that, but the last 100 years of the first Beis HaMikdash, after the exile of the 10 tribes, we did not keep Yovel. So people, you have to understand this. The reason we don't keep Yovel has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash. Yovel is not dependent on the Beis HaMikdash, but Yovel is dependent on most of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, and that includes the lost 10 tribes. I remember there was a rabbi, he's still alive, his mission in life is he goes around identifying lost Jewish groups, and he tries to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. So he found people in Peru, like 20 Indians in Peru that he thought were Jewish descent, etc. So the Israeli government was very, very supportive of him, because, you know, Baruch Hashem, bring back 20 people from Peru and Aztecs and all these different things. Anyway, he came to the conclusion that 30 million members of the Pashtun tribe, which is the largest ethnic group in Afghanistan, were Jewish. So he wanted to bring 30 million people to Israel. So the Israeli government backed out a little bit of that situation. Well, because the Pashtuns are interesting. They're Muslims. They don't practice Judaism. But they have some strange Jewish customs. They fast on Yom Kippur, which is unknown to Islam. And they do circumcision on the eighth day. Now, Islam, based on Yishmael, does circumcision as well, but not on the eighth day. They don't do it on the 13th. Yishmael did his bris when he was 13. They don't do it on the 13th birthday either. They do it earlier, like whatever it is, 5 to 8. But they do it on the eighth day. So this rabbi had some suspicion that they were actually Jewish. But be it as it may, part of the Yovel ritual, the Torah says, is on Yom Kippur of Yovel. So it says, let me just find the pasuk here.
What was the name of that
group? Pashtun. It's also sounds like a Hebrew sounding word, like Pshat, Pashtun, in the Afghanistan.
Jewish.
That's right. Okay, this is Perek Chafei, Pasuk Tes in Vayikra. Vahavarta Shofar Teruah Vachodesh Hashvi'i Biasor Lachodesh, Bayom HaKippurim, Taviru Shofar, B'chol Artzachem. So it's interesting. There is a specific mitzvah of blowing the shofar. Here it says the word shofar. Not on Rosh Hashanah. That would be the general mitzvah. We haven't proven that yet. But on Yom Kippur of Yovel. Yovel actually begins, at least the laws of Yovel begin on Yom Kippur. They don't begin on Rosh Hashanah. And you blow the shofar on Yom Kippur. In fact, the Torah writes that the reason we blow a shofar at the end of Yom Kippur is to commemorate the blowing of the shofar every 50 years on the Yom Kippur of Yovel. We don't want to blow on Yom Kippur because since Yom Kippur is like Shabbos, so Bizman has said we don't blow, but we blow right after Yom Kippur to commemorate the blowing of the Yovel, even though l'chor that's a kasha. I mean, they only blew for the Yom Kippur of Yovel every 50 years. We blow after Yom Kippur every single year. Okay, but be it as it may, that's the connection. Now, what are the halakhas of Yovel? Yovel has a number of halakhas. Number one, it's like Shemitah. You're not allowed to work the land. So that actually means there would be two consecutive years of not working the land, because year 49 is a Shemitah year, and year 50 is a Yovel year. That's one thing. Number two, slaves go free. Both the Jewish slave and the non-Jewish slave, Yovel. And even if the slave had his ear pierced, and normally he doesn't go free after 6 years, he goes free when the Yovel comes. And number three, all property, all land that was sold in Eretz Yisrael goes back to the original ancestral owners. That would be quite difficult if Yovel were to come back, so some guy would show up and claim that he owns the Tel Aviv beach strip with a lot of hotels, there'll be a question of how do you calculate the improvements and the buildings and the like. So there'll be a whole industry when Mashiach comes of rabbinic lawyers, rabbinic real estate lawyers, who will have to figure out who owns the property. A posek's not going to have time for that. I mean, there'll be a legal special. How do you trace, the the yichus of property going all the way back to hundreds and hundreds of years. Yeah.
So essentially this mitzvah is impossible to fulfill until Mashiach comes, because how could we ever know who ancestrally owned this given plot of land? No one has a record.
Well, basically it is functionally impossible, yeah. Yeah, but there might be individuals who could show it. I mean, for example, there are individuals who have their yichus going all the way back. Now, how will they know what their land was? That's another question.
Right.
Even if I know my yichus, I don't know what the land was. Yeah, there's really no practical way that we're able to know how to do this. Okay, now, I'm going to show you, I'm just going to give you the Gemara's methodology. Essentially, we have the Gezeirah Shavah, right? What is Gezeirah Shavah? When the Torah uses the same words in two places, we have a part of the oral law is we can compare the context. So by Rosh Hashanah, it says the word Truah. Now Truah, standing alone, Kintaka means shouting. But it says by Yovel, Shofar Truah. So just like by Yovel, when it says the word Truah, it does not mean shouting, it means blowing the shofar. So too, when it says Truah by Rosh Hashanah, both in Emor, when it says Zichron Truah, and in Pinchas, when it says Yom Truah, it is B'Shofar. Okay, so everyone got that first step. So it's the Gezeirah Shavah of Truah Truah that tells me that on Rosh Hashanah there's a mitzvah to blow shofar. So again, paradoxically, the Torah does not use the word shofar. Shofar, by the way, just means a hollowed animal horn. I mean, that's the translation of shofar. Right? It only appears shofar by Yovel, but through a Gezeirah Shavah of Truah Truah, I learn out that it applies to Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Now, the question then becomes, all right, so we now know from the Gezeirah Shavah that you have to blow the animal horn. You have to blow the shofar. Okay. How many times do you have to blow the shofar? Now, well, you know, even without going through a detailed count, that we blow the shofar quite a lot of times, but you're going to see that there's been a lot of evolution. And some of the blowings are Durabanan, some of them are Doraisa. So here is the first step. Under Torah law, you have to blow the sound that is called Truah three times. Why is this? Because the word Truah appears three times. Two times by Rosh Hashanah, Yom Truah, Zichron Truah, and one time by Yovel. And since the Gezeirah Shavah says, you compare the two, so the one of Yovel gets imported into Rosh Hashanah, and the two of Rosh Hashanah get imported into Yovel. So both for Yovel and for Rosh Hashanah, you must blow Truah three times. Okay, I'm not defining the term yet. Okay. We have another rule, which is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, that whenever you have to sound a Truah, it must be bracketed with a Tekiah before and a Tekiah afterwards. So therefore, right, therefore, now we know tekiah. Tekiah is a straight sound. Straight, unwavering. So, if you need three truos, and every trua must be bracketed with a tekiah before and a tekiah after, then the actual number of times you must sound the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and who I've been on Yom Kippur of Yovel, is nine times. Now, a little clarification of how we're counting this. Although the Truah itself has a lot of staccato bursts, we count that as one. We count a Truah as one because it is one sound that is divided that way. So, the Doraisa, how many kolos, how many sounds must a person hear on Rosh Hashanah? Nine. Tekiah, Truah, Tekiah. Tekiah, Truah, Tekiah. Tekiah, Truah, Tekiah. Zemaspik. That is the mitzvah of shofar. We know shofar from a Gezeirah Shavah to Yovel. We know three truos because it says two truos by Rosh Hashanah and one by Yovel, and the Gezeirah Shavah combines them. And we know as part of the oral law that every Truah sound must be bracketed with a Tekiah beforehand and a Tekiah afterwards. Now I'll explain the significance of that shortly. Yeah.
So
So I just want to ask you a question about the Gezei Resheva.
Yes.
How do you know taking it in from the Jubilee year and importing it into
Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah. Like, why wouldn't it have just said 3 for Rosh Hashanah?
That's a very good question. Meaning to say, you can have this question in many cases. Meaning, why bother? Why is there a need to learn a halacha by importing it? Why couldn't the Torah state it very, very directly? It is a good question. According to one opinion in the Gemara, actually, the 3 might only be drabanan. Means a raisa, you only go with the 2 of Rosh Hashanah. You know, there is such an opinion. The Gemara itself brings such an opinion, which is exactly what you said. We only use the Gezei Resheva to tell me that Shrua means shofar, but not for how many times. But once again, though, there is a general idea in the Torah that the Torah wants to give strength and credence to the oral law, so it'll sometimes deliberately obscure the written text to force you to rely on the Torah Shebal Peh to know the halacha. In other words, the Torah would rather not write it down so that it'll show you that the halacha depends on the Torah Shebal Peh. There is such an idea like that.
Do all Gezei Resheva's work like that, where you would import?
Not always, but sometimes the Gezei Resheva can do that. That's called litain es amor bazeh bazeh v'es amor bazeh bazeh, meaning to say, the Gezei Resheva says what's written here is as if it's written there, and what's written there is as if it's written there. So the 2 of Rosh Hashanah go over to Yovel, and the 1 of Yovel goes over to Rosh Hashanah, so it's as if you got 3 and 3.
Right.
Okay, so where are we right now? So right now we are left with 9 sounds. Tekiya, Trua, Tekiya. Okay, now, here is our problem. We know what a Tekiya is. Tekiya is a long sound. We actually know what a Trua is as well. A Trua is a broken sound. I mean, we know that. Tekiya is strong, straight. Trua is broken, wavering. But the problem is, there is a suffix, or there was a suffix, which particular type of broken sound is the Trua of the Torah? What does the Torah mean by Trua? Right? Everybody holds that Trua of the Torah means a broken sound, a wavering sound, a crying sound. Basically, the Trua is supposed to be the sound of crying to Hashem. But there were 3 different options as to what it was. Option 1, the Trua of the Torah, remember, the Torah does not use the word Shvarim. The Torah only uses Trua. The Trua of the Torah is what we call the Shvarim. That is called like a type of sobbing sound, or groaning sound rather, In other words, 3 elongated. So option 1 is the Trua of the Torah is what we call Shavarim. Option 2, the Trua of the Torah is what we call the whimpering of the Trua. Write that. And option 3 was, it was a combination of groaning and sobbing, which is what we call Shavarim Trua. Now again, people get confused, because when we say Trua today, we mean the staccato, and when we say Shavarim, we mean the elongator. But the only thing the Torah says is Trua. So the problem is, these are 3 variations of what is Trua. So what happened was, in the time of the Mishnah, some places were blowing Tekiya, Trua Tekiya, 3 times, the staccato, the whimpering, the sobbing. Some places were blowing the moaning, Tekiya Shavarim Tekiya, 3 times. And some places were blowing Tekiya Shavarim Tekiya, Shavarim Trua Tekiya, 3 times. Meaning, if you would walk in different shuls in the time of the Mishnah, you would only hear the shofar 9 times. But in some places, it was Tekiya, Shavarim, Trua, Tekiya, 3. In some places, Tekiya, Shavarim, Tekiya, 3. In some places, Tekiya, Trua, Tekiya. So, Rav Haigoin when the great Ta'anim has a tshuva on this, he was asked, how is it possible if tshuva meant one of these options, then two of the minhagim were wrong, so much of Klal Yisrael were not makayim the mitzvah at all. How is it shayach that such a basic mitzvah got forgotten? So Rav Haidain explains that min ha-taira, any one of those options was sufficient. The tshuva had to simulate a crying sound, and these were three forms, any one of them, everybody was yaitzei. But, so in the time of the Mishnah, how many times did you blow the shofar? You blew the shofar 9 times. Now again, let me still explain how you're counting this. Since, whether you're doing a trua, or whether you're doing a shvarim trua, or whether you're doing a shvarim, all of that is a fulfillment of trua, it only counts as one. So everybody was doing 9 times. So now we come to stage two. After the Mishnah, in the time of the Amoraim, Rabbi Avohu was the Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avohu made a takana that in order to foster unity and achdus in Am Yisrael, it would be proper for all of the minhagim to be brought together. Meaning, instead of just doing 9, we want to blow 3 truos with all of the variations of the trua. Therefore, we blow 3 tekiya shvarim trua tekiyas. We blow 3 tekiya shvarim tekiyas. We blow 3 tekiya trua tekiyas. Now, so you see, in other words, what that has done is that has combined all of the different variations of what is the pshat of the word teruah in the Torah. Okay, it's important. Don't confuse what we call the teruah with the word teruah in the Torah. Teruah in the Torah is either our teruah or our shvarim or our shvarim teruah. Now, this gets abbreviated. I'm sure you've learned this over the years, just to be sure everyone understands it. This gets abbreviated, the way this is written down in Rashi Tevas, is Tashrat 3 times, Tashat 3 times, Tarat 3 times. What is Tashrat? Tekiya, Shavarim, the Reish stands for Teruah. Hey, why is the reish trua? Trua begins with a tuf, but very simple. Tekiya also begins with a tuf. So in order not to confuse tekiya and trua, the convention in Poskim is that when we abbreviate tekiya, we use a tuf, and when we abbreviate trua, we use the second letter, which is reish. So, the order of the blowing of the shofar, now this is not yet Musaf, I didn't even get to that yet, I'm talking about the initial blowing of the shofar, is going to be 3 tashrats, 3 tashats, tekiya shvarim tekiya, 3 tarats, tekiya trua tekiya. And this is the takana of Rabbi Avohu. Because until Rabbi Avohu, you only had to blow, you know, tekiya, trua tekiya, 3 times, whatever your variation was. Rabbi Avohu, to create achdus in Am Yisrael, enacted that everybody blows all of the variations. Now, it is commonly said that this adds up to 30 sounds of the shofar. Although Ramban points out that in a way that's illogical. Now, why does it add up to 30 sounds of the shofar? Because we count every tekiya as one sound, and we count every trua as one sound, although it's 9, and we count shvarim, trua, as 2 sounds. So, 3 tashrats is 12 sounds. Tekiya, shvarim, trua, tekiya. So that's 12. 3 tashats is 9. And 3 tarats is 9. So 12, 9, 9 is 18. But Ramban correctly argues. 30? I'm sorry, 30. I'm not, yeah, right. In other words, it's 12 plus 18, which is 30. right? 12:9:9 is 30. Rabban points out, however, that the logic of this should only give you 27, not 30, because granted that Shvarim and Trua are counted separately when you're blowing them as Shvarim and then a Trua, right? But when you're blowing Shvarim Trua, you're doing it because maybe that is the definition of Trua in the Torah. If that's the definition of Trua, that it's a composite, then you would not count Shvarim Trua in Tashrat as two. You would only count it as one. So therefore, instead of getting 12:9:9, you should actually have 9:9:9. That's a very powerful argument. Although the Maisa, you'll see, we clearly do count it as two. And this even has ramifications in Machloksim. That is, we'll get into the halacha later, when a Baal Tokeya, right, a Baal Tokeya blows three Tashrats, that's the first thing he blows. And every day in Elul, we blow one Tashrat. That's just a Zecher, that's a Minna. Should he take a breath between, in other words, when you blow Shvarim Trua, right, that's Shvarim Trua. Do you blow with a hepsik in between? Then do da 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 da. Or do you blow it continuous? Da 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 da. Is it neshima achas, or is it hepsik neshima? Logically, if this is the definition of the kol that is called one trua, it should be without a break. But some say since you count it as two kolos, you would have a break in between. You don't have a break within the shvarim, and you don't have a break within the trua. But some will have a break between the shvarim and the trua. Okay. So we've gone from 9 to 30. Everyone understands the idea how you go from 9 to 30. Really, you start off with, again, but see how things are building here. Because in the Torah, it only says trua twice. You don't even know what means shofar, except from the Gezeirah Shavah. The Gezeirah Shavah gives you shofar plus three truas. We then have to bracket our trua with tekiah before, tekiah after. And then we have different interpretations of what is the trua. And that's how you get 30. Okay? So the basic tekiah shofar is called 30 kolos, although Ramban would call it 27 kolos, which is very mistaken, but still by convention, we call it 30 kolos, and that is how much a person must hear on Rosh Hashanah. So even if you're not able to go to shul or the like, you are mechuyev to hear 30, not 100, 30 kolos on Rosh Hashanah, because that is the takana of Rabbi Yavo. The Araisa, three tashrats would have been enough, three tashats would have been enough, three tarats would have been enough. Rabbi Avo, Midrabanan, was mechayev you to hear three of each. Now, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah asks a very strong kasha, and that is, wait a second here. If you have three options, right, you have three options, if a true, what is the true of the Torah? Is the true of the Torah Shvarim Trua? Is it Trua? Is it Shvarim? So you do all three. So the Gemara asks the Kasha, if I do a Tashrat three times, I'm Yotzei all the options. Let's say I do Tashrat three times. Call that 12 or call that 9. Whatever you want to call it. So if the Trua is Shvarim Trua, I get it. If it's Trua, so the Shvarim is superfluous. So make believe I didn't do it. In other words, if I do a Tekiah, Shvarim, Trua, Tekiah, I got a tekiah, trua, tekiah. If I do a tekiah, shvarim, trua, tekiah, and trua is shvarim, I did a tekiah, shvarim, and a tekiah. In other words, at worst, the extra thing is just superfluous. So frekta gemara kasha, why did Rabbi Avo have to be misaken 30 kolos? Just do three tashrats, and three tashrats will be yotzei all three options. So the Gemara gives a wonderful teretz, although this is a quite complicated teretz in terms of how it applies in other contexts, and that is, well, no. Because the halacha is, you're not allowed to have hefsek or break between the trua and the tekiah. Because you have to have tekiah, trua, tekiah. So here's our problem. If I blow a tashrat, but the definition, so if trua is shvarm trua, good, that's good. But if the definition of trua is trua, then that first shvarim is mafsik between the first tekiah and the real trua. I'm not going to be yotze. Or the other way around. if the definition of trua is trua, yeah, then the shvarim is mafsik. If the definition of tekiya is shvarim, then the second trua is mafsik between the trua and the tekiya. Yeah? So as a result, because of this problem of hefsek, you have to do all three options separately, and you cannot simply do shvarim trua and say, I've covered my two bases. So that brings us up from 9 to oraisa to 30. And 30 is indeed the absolute chiyuv. A man has to hear 30 kolos of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. What about women for a moment? So women are technically peturos from shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because shofar on Rosh Hashanah is a mitzvah saseh shesman grama. It is a time-bound positive commandment, and although there are many, many exceptions to the rule that women are peturos, Shofar is not one of the exceptions. A woman is absolutely petura from tekiyas shofar. Nevertheless, as you probably know, this is one of those mitzvahs that women have gone out of their way to try to fulfill, and therefore women do go to shul, or if they don't go to shul, they hear it privately. How much do they have to hear privately? Once again, 30, not 100. There's no reason to blow. If someone is not in shul, if they're not with Seabrook, because I'll get to why we do 100. I didn't get to it yet. There is no reason for a yachid to have to hear the shofar 100 times in Rosh Hashanah. The chiyuv is to hear it 30 times. And even that is drabanan. The deoraisa would be 9 times, and it's only the takana of Rabbi Yavohu that is mechayev him to hear it 30 times. So it becomes a chiyuv drabanan to hear it 30 times. And by the way, based on what your question before, I want to point out, even the 9 times may not be deoraisa. The deoraisa may be 6 times, because it only says trua twice by Rosh Hashanah, and the Gezeir Sheva might only be an asmachta for a drabanan. So there's actually an opinion that only 2 tekiya, trua tekiyas, would be maspik for Rosh Hashanah. Okay. We now come to another development. And I'll continue this tomorrow. And that is, we know that the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah is a very unusual structure. The Musaf of every Shabbos and Yom Tov, actually every Musaf, even Rosh Chodesh, is 7 brachos. Right, the first 3 brachos are avos, remembering the merit of our forefathers, gevuros, Hashem's might, and kedusha, atal kadosh. And then the last 3 brachos are ritzei, we ask Hashem to accept our service, modim, we thank Hashem, and sim shalom, we ask Hashem for peace. Okay? The middle bracha of Shabbos, Yom Tov, every Musaf, is about the holiday, whether it's Rosh Chodesh, whether it's Pesach, whatever it is, and it ends Mekadesh Yisrael for Rosh Chodeshim, Mekadesh Yisrael v'Hazmanim, Mekadesh HaShabbos, Yom Kippur, Mekadesh Yisrael v'Yom HaKippurim, even Rosh Hashanah, we also have Mekadesh Yisrael v'Yom HaZikaron, the Day of Remembrance. But the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah is the only Amidah of the whole year that instead of having 7 brachos, it actually has 9 brachos, the first 3 and the last 3. But instead of a middle bracha, there are 3 middle brachos. Even Yom Kippur has a long vidui, a confession at the end, but Yom Kippur only has 7 brachos. The amidas of Yom Kippur are 7 brachos, even though there's a lot of extra things you say. But the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah is very unique. It has 9 brachos. And the Gemara, in fact, says the basis for the number 9 is significant. We know that one of the things that happened on Rosh Hashanah was that Chana, Shmuel's mother, Chana was a woman who didn't have children. She was blessed with conception on Rosh Hashanah. And that is one of the ways that Rosh Hashanah is a special day of bracha for Am Yisrael. And when Chana had the son who became the righteous Shmuel, who was as great as Moshe and Aaron combined, right, you heard that Gemara says that Shmuel, his mamish, was so exceptionally great. So we have in Perek Beis of Shmuel, hopefully you've learned this, the Shiras Chana. Chana had a song of praise and thanksgiving to Hashem. And in Chana's Shira, there's much Nevuah. In fact, it's the Haftarah. The Haftarah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah is the birth of Shmuel and Shiras Chana. So it mentions that Chana mentions Hashem's name 9 times in her tefillah. And therefore, Chazal were misaking the Amidah to have 9 brachos, keneged the 9 times to bring the schus of Chana in. Now, These three middle brachos, each of them has a distinct theme. First of the three, meaning the fourth bracha, is called Malchios. It deals with Hashem's kingship. The second theme is Zichronos. It talks about God remembering the good deeds of our forefathers. And the third is called Shofaros, dealing with different the psukim that talk about the blowing of the shofar, both the shofar of Matan Torah and the shofar of Mashiach and Kibbutz Golias. Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Now, Chazal were misaking that in addition to the blowing of the shofar as a mitzvah, we should, whenever we conclude any section of the Musaf, we blow the shofar so our prayers will come up to Hashem. So as a result, therefore, after Malchios, we blow the shofar. After Zichronos, we blow the shofar. And after Shofros, we blow the shofar. Okay? Now, these are two different, so the tekiyos before Musaf, right after Torah reading, they are given the name tekiyos demiyushav, the tekiyos of sitting down. Now, even though we stand up, but since it's not Shemona Esrei, you're allowed to sit down. And the tekiyos al seder habrachos of Musaf are tekiyos dimi'uma. They are the standing up tekiyos. And the way we do it is the following. The way we do it is, well, again, this is a little confusing because the takana of blowing at Musaf preceded Rabbi Yavo's takana. So let's go back to how it would have been done originally. The way it would have been done originally is that the Torah says you're supposed to blow tekiyah, truah, tekiyah three times. So you would take one of them after Malchios. You would blow tekiyah, truah, tekiyah after Malchios. Tekiyah, truah, tekiyah after Zichronos. Tekiyah, truah, tekiyah after Shofros. Now, you then have to superimpose Rabbi Avo's takana onto this halacha. And since Rabbi Avo says you've got to do all three variations of what is a truah, so after Malchios you blow one tarat. So that way you've done it once. Then after Zichronos, one tashrat, one tarat. After Shofros, one tashrat, one tarat. Okay? In other words, this way what you've done is you've taken the tekiyah, truah, tekiyah, one, and you've done one of them after each of these sections. Again, I'm going to be mentioning a lot more about this a little later. I just want to point out that there is, and maybe you've seen this or experienced this, there is two very, very fundamental minhagim as to what does it mean to blow the shofar after the Musaf blessings. The Ashkenazic minhag of most Ashkenazim, not all Ashkenazim, is we only do this in the repetition of the Shemona Esrei. So we blow before Musaf, and we blow in the repetition of the Shemona Esrei. That's what you're going to see at Dor Sameach, most yeshivas, most Ashkenazic yeshivas. Okay, now, if you go with the calculation that the three variations add up to 30, so you'll have 60 sounds altogether. Svardim, Eidot HaMizrach, and Svardim, and Men, and Chassidim, Ashkenazic Chassidim, they blow not only in the repetition of the Shemona Esrei, but they blow in the silent Shemona Esrei as well. Now, what does that mean? I mean, every person blows when he reaches. No, obviously not. It's when the chazan or the Baal Tefillah reaches that point in the silent Amida, which means everybody could be in a different place. You could all of a sudden be in the middle of some other bracha, and all of a sudden you could either be ahead or behind, and all of a sudden you hear the shofar blowing. Very, very strange if you're not used to it. But and it's very awkward as well because nobody can move. So sometimes, you know, if the Baal Tokeya cannot get out the sound and he has to pass the shofar around, he has to pass it. He can't like move and give it to somebody. So Dr. Abraham Tversky tells the story that when he was 8 years old, he wound up, you know, in his father's show in Milwaukee, they blew in the silent Amida, and everyone has the palace over their heads, and they were passing around the shofar, and somehow it got into his hands, and he blew the shofar perfectly, as an 8-year-old. And after davening, everybody wanted to know, who was that great Baal Tokeya? And it was an 8-year-old kid, and of course nobody was Yotze, unfortunately, if a katan blows the shofar. So he said he experienced simultaneously his father's pride and his father's annoyance, kind of a combination of both things going on at the same time. So therefore, here's the point to keep in mind. Ashkenazim, by the end of Musaf, have heard the shofar 60 times. Svardim, by the end of Musaf, have heard the shofar 90 times. Okay, the difference simply is, did you hear the tekiyos in Chazaras Hashatz? Now, let me point out as well, and again, an important point, which explains what I said before. The obligation of blowing during Musaf, whether you do it in the repetition or the silent or both, is only in a minyan. A yachid does not blow in Musaf at all. So that's why I said a yachid who's not in shul only hears 30. You don't have to hear anything on Musaf, because this takanas chachamim of blowing in Musaf is only for a tzibur. It is not for a yachid. Right? So a yachid does not blow during Musaf, and we don't blow for him during Musaf. Now, so what I'm trying to show you is an evolution. We started with 9, we moved to 30, and then we go, because of Meuma, we go from 30 to either 60 or 30 to 90. Okay, now, there is another custom, which is our final custom here, which does not date. Now, all of this is the law of the Gemara. You get these numbers from the Gemara itself, although the Gemara does not indicate that you blow in the silent Amida. There is a later custom from the time of the Gaonim, it's not in the Gemara, that one should try to hear on Rosh Hashanah the shofar 100 times. And that is not Midina de Gemara, that is not in the Gemara at all, but that is connected Kabbalistically to confusing the Satan. It's also connected to the idea that Sisera, who was a Russia that wanted to destroy us in the time of the Shoftim, his mother sobbed for him 100 times, and that awakens mercy for God, even on evildoers, and our crying counteracts that mercy that God might have for Rishayim, so we blow 100 times. So as a result, after Musaf, after the Musaf, we got to make up 100 times. Okay? So how do we get 100 times? So, Svardim and Ashkenazim will have different ways. Svardim are only missing 10. Because Svardim already have 90. So to get 10, all you got to do is blow one tashrat, which is 4, we're going with that, one tashat, which is 3, and one tarat, which is 3. You got 10. Ashkenazim, however, are missing 40. We got to do 40, right? So Ashkenazim have to do much more after Musaf. So we got to do the following. We got to do 3 tashrats, 3 tashats, 3 tarats that get you 60. And then we do one of each. One tashrat, one tashat. I'm sorry, get you 30. And then we do one tashrat, one tashat, one tarat, which is your 10. And that's how you get 40. Okay? This may be obvious here. The reason maybe why I wanted to mention it, because I remember myself, the first time I came to Neri Shul, I guess it was the first time I became aware. I mean, obviously, as a kid, they're blowing shofar, but you're just blowing shofar all over the place. You don't know what's going on. But I became aware. It was such a long davening. I remember, like, we were davening Musaf until 4 o'clock or 4:30. And I was exhausted. I said, oh, finally, I get to eat something. Then all of a sudden, they start blowing the shofar again. Like, why are they doing this? Didn't we just, So you have to understand that it's basically because you have to have the hundred kolos. So if you're Svardim, you'll have very little after Musaf to do, only 10, one of each. Ashkenazim, you're going to have to do 30. Now, this is assuming a good case scenario that nothing has to be repeated. Right? This is, even if all of the blowings are perfect, you got to do these numbers. Sometimes, unfortunately, there are going to be mistakes that are made, and then you'll have to do more than that in order to get them right. Okay? So that's kind of the evolution of how you go from 9 to 100. Right? You start off with 9. And then you go all the way to 100. Yeah.
I
I didn't mention it already. I apologize. What's the reason that we have to kind of crack it with Rosh Hashanah?
Yes, yes. I actually didn't mention it, but I'll talk about it. The basic idea is that the Shvarim is crying and grief. And the Tekiah, though, is the Simcha of being connected to Hashem. And therefore the notion is that even though I'm doing tshuva and I'm crying to Hashem for forgiveness, but I have to come in with the Simcha that Hashem loves me and He will accept my prayers. So you don't come in just depressed. You do tshuva, but you have a confidence and a security in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love that sustains you and strengthens you throughout the process, right? That's the idea of why. Now, how we know that, that's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, really. That's not, we know that every trua always has to be bracketed. The Torah does not say it, but favorite.